Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for this program. This is another in our ongoing series, The News in Review. And once again, we're going to be looking back at the events in both the Kayleigh Anthony and Hayley Cummings cases. As always, our chat room is open, and you're welcome to ask your questions there. Also, our switchboard is open, and the dial-in number is area code 646-378-1120. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Jan, it's always great to talk to you.
Yeah, it's good to talk to you too, Simon. Hello, everyone.
Yeah, she's sat less than 3 feet away from me. From Gainesville, Florida, we should have TJ Hart on the line. TJ, are you with us?
And a happy 2010. I was told by those in authority that I can't say 2010, that it is indeed 2010. I don't know who they are, but I'm going to find out who they are because they always say things, but nobody knows who they are.
You know, that was a subject that was discussed on CNN a couple of days ago. You know, is it 2010 or 2010?
Well, there's somebody with a very big agenda who says it's 2010, my friend.
Okay. So tell us about the Sugar Bowl.
The Sugar Bowl, it was sweet, indeed, because our Florida Gators, in fact, two of our three major colleges were bowl winners, and I thought it was really nice that Tim Tebow, a young man I really think highly of, not necessarily or as much as a football player, but as a man, and as a very capable young man who has done so much to maybe shift the attitudes of some younger people and even some older people, a man who, when he gets done playing football on Saturday night, Sunday, his butt goes to prison, not as an inmate, but to minister and to lay witness God's word to those behind bars. And this man's been doing that for 4 years, and that was his last game, and he probably played the best game of his life. The Gators victorious, and then Bobby Bowden, who's been coaching at Florida State University since many people who listen to this radio show have been alive. I think it's been 40-some-odd years or 30-some-odd years, retired. He was asked to leave after, a good long stay, but his team won the Gator Bowl. I don't want to make this a sports show, but it was a very happy, happy, happy North Florida. University of South Florida, of course, beat Northern Illinois in the, I don't know what the heck that bowl was, but they had fun.
That's the main thing. From Sin City, Nevada, we have the crime doctor, otherwise known as author and crime aficionado, Denny Griffin.
Greetings, salutations, and Happy New Year to everybody.
Denny, I'm reading a book about your fair city. It's called Under the Neon Sky. It's a memoir of a doorman at the MGM Grand. I'll bet he knows some of your friends.
I haven't read the book, but I'd be willing to bet you're right.
I'm going to get you and him in touch at some point.
It would be fun. Please do.
I think we might have investigative journalist Levi Page on the line. Levi, is that you?
Yes, I'm here. How are you, Simon?
I'm doing very well indeed. Did you have a splendid holiday season?
Yes, thanks.
You weathered it unscathed?
Yes.
Splendid. Okay, on with the program. Let's start with Kayleigh Anthony. What happened this week? Well, actually, she had a couple of great events on Christmas Day. She had a wonderful dinner consisting of roast beef and all the trimmings. And on New Year's Day, she enjoyed glazed ham and turkey, au gratin potatoes, pinto beans, bread and butter, and some juice. The best bit, though, was the dessert. which I think deserves.
Did she get her just desserts?
She did. She had a nice plate of devil's food cake.
Fits so perfectly.
Casey's also slated to be in court this month to face this fraud trial, the checks that were fraudulently written. Her murder trial is still months away, but the question is, will this check deal cause her major problems in the murder trial? I know Baez has been fighting tooth and nail to prevent this fraud case going ahead. Let's ask the panel. What do you guys think?
I hope so. I hope it hurts her.
Levi, you've been following this case fairly closely. Do you think that the fraud trial is going to have a significant impact?
Well, I think that it'll show what sort of person she was, that she'll even do that to her best friend. She'll do that to her elderly grandmother who's in a nursing home. That's what it'll show. And all of this happened right at the time when Haley was missing, stolen by that nanny, according to her. So I think that it'll be interesting. But I think ultimately we have a bigger fish to fry in the murder trial. And I don't know if any of y'all, did y'all hear about Andrea Lyons and some comments that she had made to a group of Florida defense attorneys? She was giving a speech, and in that speech she had said some very inflammatory things, calling victims' advocates the B-word. She accused female prosecutors of being the B-word, and she said that they wore strap-ons. She came across as a very arrogant person. She even called herself a genius in that speech that she gave, and it just seems to me that her defense team is not coming off very likable in the media, and I just wonder, how will they come off to a jury there in Orlando if the fraud trial and the murder trial stays in Orlando?
Well, wasn't that the same speech where she called jurors killers?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a great way to whip up public support.
Isn't that akin to walking the plank and then taking a saw and then start sawing the plank to put some more distance between you and your detractors?
Yes, pretty much.
Hi.
But, you know, they're angry. They're angry at Bill Schaefer for leaking that tape, but we don't know if he's the one who leaked it, but it's just so odd that they're attacking him instead of, addressing what she said, those very inflammatory comments. And I just don't understand how someone as arrogant as she is has been able to win all the death penalty cases that she has said she's won. She has a book coming out. She says that she's the first woman to ever sit first chair on a death penalty case. She's never lost a death penalty case. You would think that jurors would be smart enough to see her arrogance. Maybe she's good at hiding that in front of a jury.
Okay, but I'll play devil's advocate for 2 seconds. It's not clear to me that they're going to be able to get a death penalty guilty verdict on this one. I mean, there's too much other stuff going on.
Oh, I disagree because, I remember talking to a local reporter who had covered this, and they said that a lot of people were thinking the same thing, but whenever Jeff Ashton went in front of the courtroom and said, hey, look, this woman, and argued to Judge Strickland, this woman put 3 layers of duct tape not only around her child's mouth, but around the nose, blocking out the air. That is just premeditated. And we also have the chloroform. We have these searches months and months in advance. And the defense, they can go, oh, we don't know if she searched those. Yes, we do. I know for a fact that she searched them because there were also searches during the time she was searching for recipes of chloroform, there were also searches on that computer for Zanny the Nanny. Nobody knew of Zanny the Nanny but Kaylee and Casey, I mean. And why would anybody be searching for this Zenaida Gonzalez at the time? You know, it's complete BS, and I think they're going to be able to get a death penalty in this case, especially if this woman injected her child with chloroform. I mean, can you imagine that, doing that to your own child? It would also be easy to get her to inhale this chloroform to knock her out, because I've been told that chloroform has a sweet smell to it.
Indeed, but again, I'll play devil's advocate. Of course, all of this is going to go away on February 1. This is the big day when Baez is going to be revealing his smoking gun.
Yeah, that he has until February 1st to come up with this proof that he claims that they have that can absolutely prove that she didn't do this. And I don't see this happening at all. I just can't imagine anybody holding out this long if they've got proof that the client is innocent. Why haven't they come out with it yet? It's just ridiculous. It's just talking. It's buying time is what he did. That's all he's done.
Denny,
yes.
the crime doctor.
Yes.
Do you think Baez is going to turn up on February the 1st and say, here it is, folks?
Let me begin, though, by wishing Levi a Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And I hope he is right about the death penalty situation. I hope that comes to pass. But it seems to me that if he does show up with a legitimate smoking gun, that clearly, beyond any doubt, exonerates his client, then he ought to be charged with malpractice for letting her sit in jail for all these months if he has that type of information and is hanging on to it for some reason. So, no, I don't anticipate a smoking gun. Maybe a lot more allegations. You know, it was the guy that called in that the body was in a certain place, of the meter reader, or, you know, Grund or something, all these different people throwing him out there as suspects. But as far as a smoking gun with conclusive, credible proof that she is totally innocent, I don't anticipate that's going to happen.
Oh, I think you're right. TJ, do you have any comments?
Oh, I agree with Denny. And I got to say that also this other stuff that's going on, you know, the jury, the people who are out there in Joe Public land who could be selected as jury members, either absolutely hate this woman or they don't know what's going on because they're not paying attention to the news. I don't know of too many people out here in Florida, especially in Central Florida where I am, who have a favorable opinion of this woman, simply because of everything that has been portrayed on television, in the newspapers, and on the internet. Someone had mentioned, I think it might have been Levi, had been talking about what are you going to do? I mean, where are you going to set up this jury? Well, we had a case where Jessica Lunsford, who was kidnapped, raped, and buried alive by Johnny Vander Cooey in Homosassa, which is on the Gulf side of Florida. They took that cross state and far south, way down to Miami. And believe it or not, the power of the media is such that they had a real tough time getting an impartial jury. So what they wound up getting was a bunch of people who wouldn't pick up a newspaper if it was dropped on their head. They wound up getting folks who only get their news from Entertainment Tonight because everything else is too tragic. And, you know, God bless them. There are folks who just, they say enough. And that's pretty much what they had to come through. And, I mean, I think there were hundreds that had to be to go through for a jury pool. What's going to happen here with this fraud thing first is not going to change too much of anything. A lot of people have their minds made up or they're clueless. And I will tell you this right now, expect a very clueless jury, and expect that jury to probably be selected in Miami.
Can I ask a question, Simon?
Certainly.
Getting back to the point, well, Levi and TJ both have been talking about, as far as likability, I once heard someone say, I don't remember just what trial I was watching or following, but one of the analysts on a TV station said, what you don't want to do is have the client be convicted because it's really a conviction of the lawyer, where the lawyer or lawyers come across as so arrogant and unlikable that that the jurors, when they get in the room, decide they're going to cast a vote to some degree based on their dislike of the juror of the lawyer. And
that's
a good point. Yeah, from what I'm seeing so far, and this talk about the Lyons woman and so forth, I don't know who's advising the defense team. I'm assuming they have all kinds of people advising them, jury consultants and experts on juries and so forth. And I don't know, I'm having a hard time justifying in my own mind how they're putting together some of these people. Expertise is great, and you have to have it. But if your courtroom demeanor and so forth is such that it turns the jury off, I don't care how sharp you are,
Denny, that's a good point.
People tune you out. What is it?
Mm-hmm. Because Drew Peterson, in that case, his attorney Joel Brodsky is very arrogant, just like he is. And I've heard people that have been in that courtroom there in Chicago have said that those two were checking out the chicks during his courtroom trial. They goof off, they laugh with each other. They went on a radio show to do a dating thing. And I think with all of these cases, we see people like Casey Anthony. They get attorneys that are a lot like them. And I think her and Jose Baez, they connected very well. They were eating licorice together in the jail cell, and she spent all that hours upon hours in his office. They're probably a lot alike, and they're probably both very stupid, arrogant, dumb people.
And
that's why he had to have all these backup attorneys, because he's not good enough.
The other thing, and I think Levi mentioned this, that at the minimum, the fraud trial will further expose Casey's personality and what type of person she is. And I mentioned this months ago when she was first arrested, even before the remains of Kaylee were found. I said, I've yet to see anything likable about this girl. I mean, I'd have thought, even going way back, that if maybe a former classmate or something would have come out and said, well, I don't know what's happened to her lately, but she was the sweetest thing you ever wanted to meet when she was in school. She was always doing for other people, blah, blah, blah. And I just haven't seen that. So, I don't know how her image that the public have of her can be resurrected. There just doesn't seem to be anyone out there that's got a lot of positive things to say about her. Am I missing that, or does everybody find it the same way?
Even her parents don't have anything good to say about her.
Didn't one of the boyfriends say something about that this isn't the Casey that he was dating, that she had changed?
Yeah, I think you're right there.
I don't remember if it was Jesse or which one it was, but one of them did make that statement that the Casey that he's seeing now is not the same Casey that he dated.
Okay.
That she had changed, and he don't know what happened to the Casey that he knew.
I do recall that. I think it was Jesse. I'm not positive, but
I'm not sure either, but it seems like it was.
Actually, it was Jesse and his father, Richard.
Richard, I know Richard said that she was not the same. I mean, they actually enjoyed being around her, but they're seeing a different side of her. It's just like she made such a switch on them. I don't know what did it or what caused it or whatever, but apparently she did change.
But people with positive thoughts of Casey, I think it's safe to say, are few and far between.
Oh, I think they're very few and far between. You know, outside of Jose Baez and his seven dwarfs, I find it hard to find anyone that's going, oh, she's innocent. Yeah.
Besides their parents.
Yeah. Well,
I don't even think they believe it.
Right.
They
I
don't.
Mean, even the parents are somewhat, you know, reticent about saying that.
How much credibility do any of these people have? I mean, really,
none, if
think
you
about
ask
it.
Me.
Nobody. None of them that are on the defense end of things seem to have any credibility at all.
Well, I personally think that the whole family has something to do with the cover-up of it.
Well,
yeah.
there's still lots of lovely conspiracy theories. You know, that concrete pad that was suddenly laid. Why haven't they dug that up?
I don't know. They haven't. I think they should have. They could have probably found her clothes underneath there. I don't know. But I still think that the whole family had something to do with it. Not to the murder itself, but the cover-up of it.
Okay, let's move on to our other story, Haley Cummings. TJ,
yes,
bring
sir.
Us up to date. What happened over the holiday period?
Well, we had some incidences involving Ronald Cummings, the father of missing Haley, who's been gone now almost 11 months, and also Misty Crosland Cummings, Ron's babysitter turned wife turned ex-wife, but still managed to be a passenger in his vehicle the other night, and a fellow by the name of Charlie Jones, Charles III. Putnam County deputies investigated an incident late Wednesday night that alleged that Ronald had allegedly been involved with an assault and aggravated battery with a deadly weapon without the intent to kill. That's what's on the incident report. Now, mind you, no arrests have been made. No one has been officially charged with anything in this ordeal. Misty had made a complaint later in that night that she had received harassing telephone calls from Mr. Jones and Mr. Jones's father. Now, what is very interesting is that I asked for and was very quickly given by Lieutenant Johnny Greenwood from the Putnam County Sheriff's Office the waveform, the sound wave files of the 911 incident where Misty was, from everything that we've been in, because they're not really commenting on this at this point, from the FTP site and from the other things that I've received, it indicates in all probability that Misty had made the first 911 call, followed by another call pretty close in time to the one made by Charles Jones. And this all takes place on a county road and on the way to Wallaca. Now, some of the things that you're going to hear are going to contradict themselves and each other, and this is why the charges in this whole ordeal are being reviewed by the state's attorney's office. It involves gunplay, and it also involves one of the characters in this asking a dispatcher, would I get in too much trouble or go to prison if I pulled a gun and shot somebody over this? Welcome to Putnam County. Now, folks, if I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, I do not believe I've ever gotten a complete truth out of anyone I've spoken to so far. And the police will tell you that they're only going to tell you what they can tell you, so I guess that is the truth, but they're holding back so they don't compromise the case. So they get a pass on that, okay, because there's some technicalities. You don't want them, you know, screwing things up on this case. But when you talk to the folks involved here, what is the truth? Well, hell, they wouldn't know it if it bit them in the buttocks. What you're going to hear here is very similar to about every question and answer session I've had with anybody involved with this case. You're either talking to a bowl of Jell-O or a box of rocks. Simon, I know you've been trying to say something. I'm sorry there, I was on a rant.
Oh, okay. I think we should kick off with Misty's 911 call.
Let's go ahead, Mr. Magic. Let's play that one. I forgot we had it.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
I'm going to make this very obvious, folks. Here's a cue. Simon, do we have the audio of Misty's 911 call to the Putnam County Sheriff's Dispatch Office?
Oh, we just happen to have it.
My goodness.
No, I'm calling him. 911. Do you have an emergency?
Yes, ma'am. I'm on 309 in Satsuma going towards Wallaca.
Okay.
There was a car. It's a what is that? A car?
It's a white
Grand Prix for the Brennan
Club.
Hold on, it's just three of us off the road. We have two children in the car.
The license plate
is T95 3MJ.
What kind of vehicle is it?
It's a Grand. What is that?
A Grand Prix.
What color?
There in the top right there.
What color is it?
It's white, and his name is Charles Jones. That's driving it.
And it belongs to Heather, whoever.
And it belongs to his girl. We know the person, but we have two children in the car. They just ran us off the road.
And that cop still didn't come out.
And we're almost to Alaska.
Okay, stay on the line with me, okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Where are y'all at right now?
We are on 309 going.
What are y'all passing?
We are passing, which is the woods right
here.
Shell Harbor. We already passed Shell Harbor. We're about to be at the, in Wallaca.
Are y'all southbound?
We're going south.
Yes,
ma'am.
Where's that vehicle at?
Now it's behind us.
Who's driving it?
His name is Charles Jones.
Is he a white male or a black male?
He's a white male.
Why did he run you guys off the road? Is he mad?
We have no idea.
Okay. What did he say?
He lives in where? Bass World. He lives in Georgetown, Bass World.
All right, what's your name?
My name?
Uh-huh.
Do I have to give my name? I don't really want to give my name out. But
he ran you off the road with your kids
Ronald,
in the car. You don't have to leave your name, but,
it's going to give us more problems. They're going to harass us, and we don't want that. We just want this person.
Okay, the only way we could stop them is if we see them driving reckless. We observe them driving reckless.
Okay, then never mind.
You don't want to, okay.
All right.
Okay, there are a couple of things here. One, kids in the car, I didn't hear. Did you hear children in the car?
No, but she said there was two.
Right.
That there was two.
So who were these kids?
My sources tell me that there were two kids in the car, although I didn't hear them. I don't have a third source to confirm it, but the two indicate who they were by name. I do not want to give the name of minor children at this point, especially if it's not true. So I'm going to keep that close to the vest on that. I'd rather have to say I'm sorry now to saying, oh, gee, I'm sorry, to somebody trying to sue me in the future in case I'm incorrect.
It is an interesting phone call, though.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the other thing that
got my dander up. You don't want to give your name. Okay, well, fine. Then if you don't want to press a charge, then we have to see them committing the offense, which is true. It sounded stupid, and it sounded like someone was just being a putz on the microphone. But it's true, and to a degree, in this case. How are they going to find them to question these people further in this incident? But there's a fine line there, and I don't know if it was crossed or not, because in other instances, like a 911 or perhaps a, what do we call that, Crime Stoppers tip, do you have to give your name there? No. So I'm going to have to do some research on that. But to some degree, if you're not going to work with them, I think she kind of went off the deep end a bit with Misty, who would not leave her name, by the way, but I think everybody knows the voices that we did hear, that to some extent, And this is, you're going to have splitting hairs. They almost had to see the thing take place. Now, both, if you in the next one you're going to hear, they're both going to mention that they both saw cop cars in this pursuit or in this road rage incident, and the police officer didn't move. I will tell you that in many rural areas where they have some high traffic things, but not a whole lot of personnel, sometimes they park a damn car there just to keep an honest person on it. It's a decoy, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm sorry for hogging the stage there. Go ahead with anything else. I apologize.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we all listen to what Charles has to say on his 911 call?
Do we have that audio?
We do indeed.
Why, Simon? Why don't we play that for the audio today?
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. What's the emergency? I got a Ronald coming behind me trying to ram me, and this is...
Okay, who's trying to ram you?
The guy on the news whose little girl went missing, Ronald Cummins, he's got problems with me.
Okay, where are you at?
I just passed Shell Harbor. There was a cop sitting there. I'm doing 80, 90 mile an hour. He's trying to ram into the back of me and slide me off the road.
Okay, so you're on 309, right?
Yeah, I'm just coming into Wallaca.
Are you... coming away from Pomona Park?
No, I'm coming away from Satsuma on 309 heading into Wallaca right now. And I know he's got a gun in the truck. See, here he comes again trying to ram me.
And your name was...
Yeah,
What's your last name?
He just ran me off the road just now, man. I almost went into the ditch. Now he's in front of me trying to slam on the brakes. And I know he's got a gun in the truck.
What's your phone number? What kind of vehicle are you in?
I'm in a white Grand Prix 2000, and he's in a white Chevy. He keeps slamming on the brakes in front of me trying to get me to pull over now.
Did he run you off the road?
Yeah, he ran me off the road two or three times, and then I'd get back on, and he'd stop, like, right behind my car on the rear corner, and then I'd start going again, just trying to get away from him, and he'd pass me again and slam on the brakes and then get beside me and slid me off the road. Now he's in front of me just going kind of slow, but he kept slamming on the brakes, and I know he's got a gun. I know that, but the cop said it's concealed, so it's legal. But can I ask you a question? If I have a pistol in my car and I pulled over and he pulls a gun on me, would I go to prison for shooting him?
I can't advise that.
Okay.
I can't give any sort of legal advice. Where are
okay.
you passing now?
We're in Wallaca coming by the post office. He's trying to pull me over now again. See, I just hit the back of his truck because he slammed on the brakes.
Okay, is Ronald behind you or are you behind Ronald?
No, he's in front of me slamming on the brakes. He just started pulling over, so I went to go around him, and he cut over.
And what is he driving?
He's driving a white truck. On the back window it says, "Only God can trust me" or some shit. And he's yelling at the window, "I'll kill you, bitch." And kind of, that's a threat, ain't it? That's against the law.
Well, when you speak with the deputy, you can ask them
well,
about
man,
that, okay?
Actually, I'm about to pull over and just fight this motherfucker. It's starting to piss me off.
No, you're not. You need to stay in your vehicle, okay?
No, ma'am. I'm getting straight. He just fucked. I hate to back off, and this
me.
Is my girlfriend's car.
I understand you're upset.
I'm pulling over now.
No, you need to not pull over, and you need to not fight him. You understand?
Yes, ma'am.
Do not pull over and fight him.
All right, well, I'm at the Wallaca Handyway. Now we're heading down. I'm going down 308B, and now he's following me again. Towards Pomona.
You're on 308 now?
Yeah, heading towards Pomona. He's behind me now trying to ram me and flicking the lights.
We're trying to get one to you as quick as we can. Did the officer that passed you, the deputy that passed you, was he in an SUV?
It was just a car sitting on the side. I went by him doing 90 in a 45. All right, I'm sitting by the Willacka baseball field. He's pulled over way back behind me. I'm, like, stopped on the road almost. See, and here he comes again. He's like a quarter mile behind me, and now here he comes again. I'm trying to pull over to find the cop to get to me, and he keeps just coming. Now he's flickering the lights flying on me. I'm passing the new complex right in Willacka that just
killed. Okay, so you're still continuing?
Yeah. He won't. Every time I pull over to stop, he keeps fucking. Now he just turned down the back road. I'm pulled over at 11th Avenue.
So you're at 11th Avenue and 308?
And here he comes again. Now I'm pulling off again, still heading towards Pomona. He pulled a gun out of the truck and pointed it at me when I was behind him earlier and said, I'll kill you. And that's when I cut to the right to go around him and hit the back of his truck. And that's when, like, I guess he didn't have a shot because he put the gun back in the truck.
Okay.
Ma'am, I'm just letting you know now, if this kid does not go to jail over this, there is going
to
be some. I will still
have to
hear
it out. Listen. To not make threats like that, and you need to speak with the deputy about this, okay?
Well, he needs to go to jail. I just got a gun pulled on me. I know how Putnam County works. He's not going to go to jail. All right, I'm still on 308. I'm passing Pineapple and everything.
You're passing the Fruit Bowl?
Yeah. And he's still behind me coming quick. I believe that's his truck. I know he pulled over and then got back out. Where is an officer at?
We have one looking for you. We have multiple looking for you.
I'm 270. I'm not trying to get no speeding ticket, but I'm not trying to get shot neither.
Okay, well, what I need you to do is slow down and do the speed limit, okay?
If I slow down, he gets beside me and pulls a gun. What the fuck am I supposed to do? I'm not trying to get shot.
You need to be safe and make sure that you do not get into an accident and cause an accident with somebody else, because if you cause an accident that involves somebody else, that's on you.
Well, this man needs to stop pulling a gun on me. I'm trying to do the speed limit, but he keeps pulling a gun.
Where are you at now?
I'm turning around heading back towards Willacka, but I got over a hill and I don't think he can see me.
Okay, so why are you going back towards him?
No, because I don't think he can see me right now, so I'm heading back the opposite way.
So you're going to pass him and you don't think he's going to see you?
No, it's a bunch of hills, so I turned around now. He was back a ways behind me.
But you're still going to have to pass him, right?
Eventually. I think this might
be... Okay, why would you do that?
Because by the time I get past him, I'm going to be gone. With the headlights coming directly at him, he can't tell it's my car.
Okay, did you already turn around?
Yeah, I'm turned around. I'm coming back towards Beecher Springs now. I'm like half a mile from Beecher Springs, heading back into Willacka.
You don't have any weapons, do you?
Interesting, when asked if he had any weapons, he declined to say.
Right. Oh.
And he was asking for tips on, you know, at what point can I shoot this guy? I will tell you that supplied both on bloggernews.net and also the sky973.com when we broke this story. We provided the police incident report on there. Officer Bridges and Valdez and I think Supervisor Frank, upon observation of Ronald's truck, there's no evidence of a rear-end collision, ironically. Ronald was asked if he did have a gun but did not carry the gun with him. This is in the police report. Ronald said that he kept the gun in a cabinet inside the house. Ronald then supplied the location of the firearm and provided access to it. He says the gun is always secured inside the cabinet in the house and did not have it during the incident. Missy signed an affidavit, blah, 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 saying that, you know, he didn't have a gun during the incident and she never saw one. Now, the problem with all this is, and with all you've heard, it's very inflammatory, very incendiary. If you're the cop, are you going to arrest anybody? I mean, you got a bunch of folks acting like stooges out there on a thoroughfare. You want to, but can you? Do you have enough probable cause? And this is why they passed this headache along to the state's attorney's office to try to figure out. Since nobody got hurt, fortunately, it was basically another full moon and knuckleheads at play.
Oh, I think the 911 calls are most illuminating. Let's take a quick call.
Let's please do.
Well, assuming my computer will comply, we have someone from the 541 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us? Whoops. My computer isn't playing exactly the way it should, but hopefully we'll have this caller on momentarily.
Hello?
Hello. 541, what's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
I'm Elizabeth, and I couldn't get on your show on the internet. It keeps saying I have a runtime error, and it won't even let me access you. So I called in to listen to the show, but since you're talking about the road rage incident, I'd like to ask, okay, is the state attorney's office going to get both sides of the story since the only police report is the one saying that the Cummings were the perpetrators in this?
The reports have been all forwarded to the state's attorney's office. They had the complaint from Jones on this, and then Misty filed her own complaint, which was about harassing phone calls. So if you would go to blockernews.net and look for the 911 audio call files and also take a look at the police incident report, you'll see that they talked to all the parties involved in this at the time. Police cannot adjudicate a case right there on the spot, as we all know, but it appears that they spoke with all of the members of those involved, and it just seemed that Jones was the one who wanted to pursue charges. It appears that Ronald did not, and Misty did wish to make a complaint about the harassing and threatening telephone calls.
Okay, well, that's good. At least they'll see that and see that, you know, this Jones guy is harassing them.
Well, that'll be for a court to decide and for attorneys to play it out, or in this case, the state's attorneys, to see if any charges are even warranted. Here's the puzzling thing with this. They're not going to play who's guilty or who's innocent with this. They have to figure out if a crime was actually committed other than perhaps a couple of knuckleheads speeding down a country road.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to listen to your show.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Here's the question I have. Clearly, this occurred at night. How did they? How did Charles spot the gun?
Well, in the tape, he said that he went around him and pulled a gun, and said, "I'm gonna something or others," and I can't say the words on the radio. But that was what Jones had stated. Whether or not that's true or not remains to be seen. Officers did check Ronald's house, check the gun cabinet. That's where he said he kept his gun. Misty signed an affidavit, said he didn't have a gun. That doesn't mean that he did at the time. Doesn't mean anything. This means people made claims and signed pieces of paper. This is why they have to take this to the state's attorney's office. I wasn't there. Nobody on this radio show listening or participating was there. So they're gonna have to try to make something out of this, or they're just gonna have to say, you know what, there's really nothing here to bother with. Nobody got hurt. Call it a day and kids behave, which unfortunately might be the case.
Is there something that I misunderstood the call or something? I don't know. But at one point, Charles's 911 call, he said that he was stopped and they were stopped behind him, what, a quarter of a mile or something, a block or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
How come he stopped? How come he didn't take off while they were stopped and to get away from him? Instead of sitting there waiting for Ronald to start to back up after him again before he took off again. It was like he was sitting there waiting for him.
That's a good question. Maybe that's one that maybe only Charles would know. I'm going to ask the crime doctor. Crime doctor, you've probably been involved with talking to folks who've been in some bizarre chases. You know, the mob works in strange ways. Does this sound like anything that you've ever, seen or been a party to?
it fits in with my perception of life there in that county. But let me ask this. I just want to make sure I'm correct on this. When Ronald was questioned, did the cops ever stop everybody on the road, or was this all done after the event when they contacted him at home or that type of thing? Was there a search of Ronald's vehicle on the road at the time of the incident?
Before he had a chance to go home, you mean?
Yeah, it seems to me that if they... I'm assuming from what I heard in the calls that the cops, multiple units were close by. I mean, and I don't know how much traffic was on the road that night or anything, but it almost seems that at some point while this was ongoing or before everybody had a chance to leave the scene, that the law should have caught up with somebody and stopped them. And I was just wondering if they searched Ronald's vehicle at the time that this allegedly took place, and there was no gun, then it seems as though Jones might have been open to a falsely reporting incident.
Right.
But obviously if they didn't get to Ronald until hours later or something, and he was already home, there's no way to prove that he had the gun or didn't have the gun. But
The report states that Ronald was away from the incident. Apparently, when the officer spoke with Charles Jones III, they said that he was on 308B, but it doesn't say where he was when this all took place. He responded to the above. I'm sorry, he was south on State Road 19 to 308B. That's when the officer responded to the location in response to the possible assault. So apparently, from what I'm reading here in this additional information portion of the. Incident report, he spoke with Jones pretty much near the scene. He then met with Ronald at 126 4th Avenue, and he was advised that he was down in that area, 308B, when he came across a parked car in the middle of the road. Ronald stated that the vehicle belonged to Charles, and as soon as he went by Charles, pursued him in attempting to run him off the road. Ronald stated that Misty Cummings was in the truck. And he said that Charles was the one who tried to run him off the road, and he said that he was parked in the middle of the road. Pretty much the scenario that toward the end of the tape where he said, I'm now kind of stopping and he's a quarter mile behind me. Now, that would somewhat fall into why Ronald was slowing down. It's like, what the hell?
Let me ask you this. I may have missed this, but as I listened to the Jones tape,
uh-huh.
I detected at certain points annoyance, like he said, I want this guy to go to jail, he's threatening me and all that. I didn't detect panic or fear. Now, maybe I missed that, but it seems to me that if I really felt in danger, either because I was subject to being run off the road and possibly injuring or getting killed in the process, or if I wasn't injured or killed but stopped and this guy was going to get out and had a gun and was going to blow my head off. I don't know. I have to think that maybe that would be reflected in my voice, that I was, I don't want to say panicked, but that I was very concerned for my own safety. I didn't get that. Do you guys think Jones sounded like he was in fear of his life?
No.
I'm going to ask Levi this question. I'm not sure if you'd heard these tapes before. What's your theory? I mean, they both sound fairly cool and collected, apart from some expletives. It doesn't sound like either of them are particularly concerned. It was more, let's inflict damage.
That's a good point that Denny made, and I agreed with them. Neither of them sounded like they were in danger of their lives. But, you know, what I find interesting is Misty and Ronald were together. Their story is that they were going to get Misty's stuff from his house.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't they have already gotten that stuff by now? They've been divorced a long time. I don't buy the story at all. It doesn't make any sense that they were going to get stuff. Yeah, right.
Well, when they were living together, Levi, they were living at Annette Sykes' house in the Buffalo Road location. It would have been the old house, the old, up there at River Villa Estates. And Misty's brother and sister-in-law, and I think mom and dad still have a home that they all jam into and have lots of fun with each other with up in that area too, at the Hermit's Cove area. So she might have had some things still at that residence. But you know, there are a lot of things in this that, and I agree with everybody on the panel, a lot of this doesn't make any sense. Geographically speaking, there are a few things that almost sounds like, you know, a 600 foot travel is putting your car in reverse and not necessarily turning around by the way they're trying to describe some of the things where they are in location on the road, especially when they get to by the Ball Diamonds, the post office, Shell Harbor, places like that that they're mentioning on the road. If you get on there and do a Google search, you're going to scratch your head. You think, well, okay, it might have been panic, might have been in the moment, or it might have been that somebody was trying to just basically force an agenda on the others. And you know what? It's not beyond people to try to get the cops to do their dirty work. You know, to exact an agenda. If how many times have we heard of girlfriends or boyfriends who have been burned by their significant other, and next thing you know, they're calling police reports on them and saying that, well, that person was involved with a robbery. I just know it. The person had nothing to do with it. It had something to do with the cops basically being used to further someone's agenda to get to somebody. And this might have been the case on both sides of this, or it might have been, again, just a bunch of knuckleheads, being knuckleheads.
Well, you know, just because the two of them are divorced now doesn't mean that they can't be friends. You know, they could just be friends together.
Oh, my word, honey.
Well, I mean, it's true, you know. It can happen.
Simon, can I
ask you? I saw it on TV once.
Denny, go ahead.
Yeah, TJ, I got a question. I'm not familiar with the Florida law. But
well, neither are people who live here.
let me ask you this. Let's get back to Misty's call. And the dispatcher is getting all kinds of information until Misty declines to give her name, says she really doesn't want to give her name. And then everything seems to be kind of diffused at that point. I don't know whether the county dispatch, even though Misty didn't want to get involved, actually alerted their patrols. One thing that comes to mind for me is, first, you have allegedly a public safety issue. I mean, if these guys are playing road rage and passing each other and bumping each other and side by side and so forth, it seems to me the public is at risk if that is true.
Innocent
person
deeply
driving down the road.
And I'm with you on that.
And the other thing is, today, I would think you'd always have to question, again, assuming this stuff is going on, that maybe alcohol's involved. And it seems to me that even if Misty didn't want to make a formal complaint, and even though I'm not familiar with the law, I buy the fact that, okay, once you don't have a complainant to go on the record, then the offense has to be committed in the presence or in the view of the officer. I can understand that. But it seems to me that when Misty said, look, I don't want to give my name, that should not have been the end of it. I would assume they would want someone to pull these vehicles over, including the Cummings vehicle, and say, hey, has anybody been drinking? What's going on here? You know, they don't have to make an arrest unless they find something during the stop. But I hope that wasn't the end of it from that first call, that when Misty said, I don't want to give my name, that everybody said, well, we'll go on to other things. We're not going to tie up a patrol checking this out. Because if, heaven forbid, if this was happening and there was a head-on with some poor innocent soul who wasn't involved in it, and this call was on record at the dispatch office, I think somebody would have some explaining to do.
Or some jail time.
Why this wasn't investigated, maybe if you had a drunk or something, they weren't taken off the road.
Very valid, and that's something I'm going to have to pursue because I don't know what happened after that call. I don't know if, and I have no way of knowing now until I, you know, do another Freedom of Information Act request as to whether or not units were sent in that area, or did they wait, you know, a few seconds later until Jones made his call, because approximately we're at the same time. But still, it doesn't dismiss someone saying, well, sorry, can't help you, bye, if that was the case. I don't know that that was the case, but it certainly is something that one could easily infer from what they heard.
Yeah. I'd be curious to know what you find out there as to how that was handled after Misty's call.
Indeed, and of course, Monday starting off the new week and the new year, guess who's getting a phone call? Excuse me, can I ask another question? I'm sorry to bother you.
Let's do this. TJ, I got a couple of emails today, people wanting to know how to contact you. What is your email address?
It's the one through the radio station. It's tjhart@entercom.com. It's tjhart@entercom.com. Enter as you enter a door. Entercom.com.
And so, folks, there you have it. TJ's the guy to send your emails to.
I get the feeling they're going to be colorful ones.
Oh, always.
Yeah, they usually are.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I was wondering on the 911 calls, which one came in first?
It appears that it would have been Misty's, but that further confirmation needs to be taken into consideration here. I received Misty's first. It was first on the FTP site, followed by the Jones one. So I'm going to have to get some definition in on this. But approximately, it was within probably a minute or within 2 minutes of each other.
So it was very well possible that when you could hear the acceleration on Charles's, that was actually Misty and them trying to drive up to get the driver's or the plate number.
It could have been anything. You know, we weren't there. You know, our ears in the theater of the mind will tell us a lot of different things, but doggone it, ma'am. None of us were there, but I know what a lot of people thought because they have found my email address, which is out there in the public. You can get it anywhere, and they've expressed what they feel that their belief is, and that's all good. It could have been anything from Ron's truck, could have been anything to, you know, somebody else trying to, you know, beat it into town at that hour of the night.
True. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Let's talk about Charles Jones. Is this the same Charles Jones that we reported on a little while ago. The guy that Misty partied with on her birthday and just before her birthday.
Well, Simon, I believe you did the story on that one.
I did.
Charles Jones III. You thought the floor is yours, my man.
Yeah, it was fairly salacious, but
you think?
But is it the same Charles Jones?
Could very well be. Charles Jones III. I'm doing my database information here. Could very well be. I do know that there are a lot of Joneses in that area, as there are in every area. The name Jones also figures prominently in a recent situation where a $24 million drug bust was taking place in Putnam County. However, that's a sizable amount of money, and that's a sizable drug bust. But you know what was going on at approximately the same time, if I'm not mistaken? You had two inmates out on the loose who had gotten all the way up to Kentucky. They escaped from the Putnam County Jail, and then they came back to see if anybody missed them. And when they came back, they needed a car, so they went to Wallaca, and they stole the car from one of the guy's step-grandmothers and killed her.
Ooh.
To get the damn car. You know what? No sooner than they got the damn car, they got caught. I was over there that day. I had been to the Haley Bug Center, and I was talking to a few of the folks in Satsuma. And on my way out of Satsuma, there was like eight patrol cars just screaming down 19 into 308. I'm sorry, 309. And they had gotten them, eventually. But they were searching everybody's car in the trunk, and my car was searched too, thinking I had two ex-cons in there. But that story got buried due to that and to some of the other antics that were taken on in the Haley Cummings case. But the name Jones figured prominently in there. So I don't know if he was involved with that or if it was family members that was involved in that $24 million case or not. I'm still weeding through there because you have Charles the Jr., Charles the Second, Charles the Third. So a lot of, and Charlie Jones, let's face it, is a common name.
It is indeed. Let's go to the phone lines. We have someone from the 218 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, my name is Kim. I just have a comment. I think that all of this stuff with Haley, with Ronald Misty, I think that it has something to do with that party that was written about, that big drug party where she was in and out of the bedroom with the girl in the bedroom sleeping. And I think maybe Ron went in there to buy drugs, or maybe she didn't get a chance to pay off some drugs, and that's why she was getting these threatening phone calls. And that's just my feeling. I think it all has something to do with all that, the drugs, and that's why she didn't want to give her name, because she was afraid that she was going to get caught. You know, maybe they had drugs on them. You know, I don't know. I just came into the show, so maybe that's already been brought up. I don't know. But anyway, that's just what I wanted to say. I've never been on the radio before, so...
Okay. I think you bring up a salient point. Drugs definitely seem to be a major feature in life in Satsuma and Palatka. TJ, you spent some time, foot on the ground. How bad is the drug problem in that area?
If you go to some of the towns in the area, they will tell you that, oh, it's not so bad. It's just some kids doing some pot, but they're really concerned about that meth. Well, these people had no idea that the pill traffic had been so underground and so blazing fast, that the pill stuff was actually becoming a little bit more more of a quicker business than they had anticipated. They were all worried about meth because of the meth. They were worried about, of course, explosions, fires, and stuff like that, and people just being drug addicts. But the thing, Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. What has been taking place is that a lot of Loratab, Roxy's, oxycodone,
yeah.
Things like that have become the basic trade now at this time. And it's a lot more widespread than anybody ever imagined. If you
it is. I believe it is a lot of small towns, because even in my small town, there's a lot of people that are on those government contracts for their pain meds, and they're selling a lot of them to make ends meet because they're on disability or something, and that's how they make their money. I've seen it a lot in this small town that I live in and many area small towns, and I believe that's probably what's going on in that area as well.
You know something, and there's something to that, because we also have Camp Blanding and a few other places around here too where people can get their prescriptions filled on the base, and then there's nothing there to say they can't take the same script and run her down to the local pharmacy and get a double deucey and take what they need for themselves and sell the rest out on the street. And I don't know how that loophole takes place or how that is arranged, but I've heard that that is a practice with some.
Yeah, I believe so too. But anyway, thank you very much for taking my call, and I'm going to get back to just listening to the show.
Okay, the last thing I have on this Charles Norman Jones, as far as a booking, was of an arson of a dwelling back in 08, set a place on fire allegedly, and he was on bond for $5,004. But the 1959 Charles Sr., guy is a little bit older than me, seems to have had some run-ins with the law here too, but I don't see anything to do with that that cocaine or that drug bust. But like I said, there are a lot of people named Jones.
Levi, are you still with us?
Yes.
Okay, hang tough. My wife wants to ask a question.
Yeah, I have a question from the chat room. They want to know, when PCSO said that they have new leads that they're going to be investigating, they want to know if there is any way that could have anything to do with this Charles Jones.
Who knows? What do you think? What do you know, TJ? He knows more about that than I do.
I don't know that these things are correlations. I do know that Lieutenant Greenwood was speaking to First Coast News, and on their website, the department had been getting some criticism from the Sheffield Griffiths side of the family, saying that they're not being kept up to speed on much of anything.
Excuse
and that
the
they,
word.
Hello?
Yes, hello? I have an opinion.
Oh, well, in one moment, please. They have stated on the website that some new information has come to light in the days prior to Haley's disappearance, and also some new information on the night she disappeared. However, Greenwood is reluctant to release any of that information for fear that it may jeopardize the case. So we won't know anything for sure on that until they feel a little bit more solid about where they're going with it. I'm optimistic, and I really do hope it helps unlock this case.
Thanks, TJ.
Denny,
yes.
Do you think there's hope for this case?
There's always hope, but my concern is not necessarily that the case will someday be solved. I'm beginning to lose hope for the safe return of Haley, and that's the biggest thing to me, is that we've said time and again over the months that the longer these things go, statistically, there is less chance for a happy ending. And that's what bothers me, is day after day, week after week, month after month go by with no credible sightings, the investigation, at least to the public, seems to be kind of at a standstill. So I'm with TJ. I certainly hope whatever this information is the authorities are talking about, the new information, turns out to be something credible, something that can be worked with.
We must keep the hope for Haley till they return safely.
We seem to have a problem caller, and I keep dumping it.
She said that we have to continue to hope. I hope. I mean, I certainly that would be a great ending to this, or at least a great step toward a happy ending of this if she's found safe. It isn't that I don't hope she is. It's I'm just trying to be realistic, and I have doubts that I hope again that I'm wrong. But the longer this goes, the less optimistic I am about that aspect of the case. But do I hope? I think at some point we'll know what happened. We'll know who did what, and we'll know why they did it. So I think eventually this thing will be solved. I just hope it's in time if it isn't already too late to get Haley back. And that would be my main concern. I don't know. Levi, what do you think about that? Do you agree that the longer this thing goes, the more bleak it
is? Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, look at what Beth Holloway did down there in Aruba. She stayed on the case. And we're never going to get justice because of those corrupt authorities there. But really, she was on the government. But with Ronald, we don't seem to have him concerned about finding Haley. You know, he's running around with Misty. You know, he divorces Misty. And we know that divorce was a big sham. He divorced her because he was tired of getting asked about Misty when he was on Nancy Grace. He was tired about getting asked about the polygraph. He was tired of getting asked about why she failed it, why she was being deceptive. He was tired of getting asked about all of these things with Misty, her story, whether or not he believed her. So he divorced her. And now that the media has died down, now that he's not getting grilled by Nancy Grace every night about Misty, he's back with her. And I think that his focus needs to be on finding his daughter, not on Misty and not on, whoever this Charles idiot is.
Right.
TJ,
yes.
Are they really back together?
Yeah.
It all depends on who you ask and what day you ask. Again, between rocks and jello. By the way, I did find a lot of my files here. The Jones fellows that I was talking that are appearing in this show, the father and son, are not involved in that $24 million drug case. If I remember right, this is something that Cobo was really riding hard on, is the fact that most, if not all, of the individuals in this case were African-American. And I think Cobra was trying to stage some kind of an event, because it seemed like some of the players who were the major players or alleged major players didn't have a whole lot of difficulty bonding out. However, some guy who happened to be black and was jaywalking would get a huge, huge bond amount. And there was something wrong with folks involved with a big drug bust being able to easily bail out. And folks who might have had an open container or some kind of a deal, very small, had a huge bond amount. And he was trying to make some hay with that. So if I inadvertently drew some dotted lines to the Jones and the drug bust, my error on that. So I just want to make sure that's cleared up.
Okay. The other news this week is that the Sheffields are in bed with some sort of charitable group. What do you know about that?
About a charitable group. I think there was a group. Let me find my notes here. This group was also appeared in that article that Greenwood made his statements. And the group, I think, was, people for children, hurting children of crimes or something like that. It was a man and a woman. They don't have much of in the way of online information. This was nothing like the Laura Recovery Group that some intermediaries who were trying to help both families at the same time, had tried to get in to help find little Haley. That Laura Recovery Group was a group out of Texas, had nothing to do with Tim Miller. In fact, the Laura in this was Laura Smithers, and it was from another town in Texas. Now, this group is based just outside of Jacksonville, the Jacksonville area, if I'm not mistaken. And the two have appeared in a couple of news stories in the past. One, I think there was a shooting that took place, and I think they may have been someone who was in the area, and they had spoken to reporters about the shooting. But little is known about the nonprofit group, or the help organization is what I'll call it. But evidently they are trying to console and trying to help the Griffith Sheffield family to the best of their ability.
Mm. And
but they seem to be down on the police a bit. They in the article that appeared in FirstCoastNews.com, they appeared to think that the police weren't doing enough, and they appeared to basically try to set a PR fire under the law enforcement's rear end on this.
Oh, that never works.
Trust me, I know.
I'm all for non-profits, but I'll tell you what, that there are a few that I've stumbled upon that are genuinely non-profit. I mean, you only have to look at the Kaylee Anthony case to see that.
Didn't they multiply like rabbits after that case?
No, absolutely.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Okay, I was wondering, okay, the family, it's been 10 months, almost 11, and how is the family surviving? None of them can work, obviously. Are they on Social Security because they can't work because of the situation?
Oh, that is actually a great question. It's something that Jen and I were discussing yesterday.
Yeah, well, according to those police reports, that Misty and Ron are both unemployed. So I would like to know how they're surviving, too. I mean, apparently Ron's physically able to work. He was working before Haley went missing. So how come he can't work now?
Well, probably because of his name.
Huh?
Probably because of his name. Nobody would want the trouble in their business.
But that's not a disability.
Well, I think there's a way that Social Security can pay a person if they're unable to work because of the situation that they're in. And that's why I was wondering if maybe they were getting Social Security through that.
SSI?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about that.
It is a great question. In fact, if you go through all of the police reports of everyone that's had confrontations in the last 8 months, 10 months, you know, that are even loosely involved in the case, you see the same story. Unemployed.
Well, Tommy appears to work, and his wife, Lindsay Crosland, she's a nursing student. Apparently, you know, some way or another, he, as far as I know, is still employed, but he's had a lot of troubles. Now, Timmy and his wife, I'm not sure what their work status was. I do know that they moved to Massachusetts. The word on the street was, well, you know, the benefits of just living there are a little bit better than Florida. They didn't say what kind of benefits.
No, but it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, it wasn't weather.
Right.
But, I mean, do any of them have jobs?
Not that I know of. Not that I'm aware. Let's put it this way. If they do, a little under the radar.
By the way, folks, our switchboard is open. And our number is 646-378-1120. And please do call in. We have probably the best...
I will tell you that...
Carry on.
I'm so sorry. Ronald is still eligible for his unemployment benefits since having that dismissal with PDM. I don't know how much longer they're going to go out, but Florida is pretty good with keep making sure that people do have some kind of a income stream when it comes to unemployment. So I apologize. That hit me late.
So in other words, he's probably still drawing unemployment.
Yeah, he's getting some income,
okay.
Yeah. My apologies, Simon.
Well, unemployment's not much, but it is something better than nothing.
Yeah. It'll put some gas in your tank and maybe some bologna and beans, you know. It'll get tight you over a little bit. I'm telling you, it's not fun to be on unemployment.
Believe me, I know.
But he lives the life of Riley. How can he possibly be on unemployment and still be able to afford the lifestyle?
Well, if you're not paying rent, you're living with family, and your meals are somewhat taken care of. I mean, that takes a big burden off your financial obligation. It is what it is. I can't explain it. I can't account for it.
Okay, and what about Misty? I mean, as far as I know, she hasn't worked very much in her young life.
Well,
depends on what you call work. Because some people have survival mechanisms and they have survival techniques. And from what I understand, I had conversations with her. I mean, hell, she talked about how her folks were basically just a bunch of overgrown hippies, and they never stayed one place too long. And sometimes they lived out of cars and this, that, and the other. And it wasn't so much a work ethic, but a survival ethic. So, you know, you can call that work if it means you're going
to
see tomorrow.
To
you got a place
survive.
To stay, and you got some food in you, and a place to stay warm.
You learn how to survive.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I could be very wrong here, but I still think that sometimes that they're not looking at the right people on here, in here. I mean, if you can only dig so far into someone's life and still come up empty, and it might be a sign that it's because it's empty and the problem lies somewhere else.
That's actually a great question. Let's go around the panel on that one. Levi, are these people just empty?
We don't know because they're not talking to the police and they're not going to talk to the police. They're not cooperating. And I just want to comment on something that you said about Crystal's family going after the police, saying that the police don't care, the police are not doing enough. You know what? They were not in Haley's life, especially Crystal. She didn't know what time Haley got home from school. She didn't know what time school let out. You know what? And now she wants to show up later and act like she cares. BS. I don't believe her for a second.
Well, yeah, but you see, the thing is, she's coming up now. But what about all these months that they've been quiet? How come now she's coming up with this? Is it because somebody has criticized her for not being involved, so she's got to make a show and say, well, okay, I'm involved? I just
mm-hmm.
don't buy it all.
Actually, Levi, you bring up a really, really interesting point. My wife and I were in Canada, and Katrina hit. And Jan was absolutely beyond herself because she didn't know where her then 16-year-old was.
Well, he was 15.
Fifteen-year-old. And she knew exactly what time he went to school, what time he got out.
I knew his teacher's names, even.
Right. And, you know, this is from 2,000 miles away. And we're talking about a woman that has a young child, doesn't know what time she goes to school, doesn't know what time she gets out. doesn't know what time she gets home. This is horrible.
I don't know. I just think that it should be investigated more. I could be wrong, and I hope I am wrong, but I just feel like something's just not right.
TJ, I know that you spent a good deal of time poking around in this particular manure pile.
Yeah.
I mean, no one can tell us who picked her up.
No, I mean, I appeared on television with Captain Dick Shawland I think Mike Galanos. God, this is way early. And thank you. I can't remember who it was. Somebody finally found the transcript because people are going, oh, TJ, you're lying. Somebody else on a blog site told me something else. She's just lying. And I'm sitting there going, well, Captain Dick said that, you know, Ron picked her up. And everybody goes, no, Misty did it. No, the grandmother did it. But apparently, you know, it goes back to who you ask and when you ask.
Right. That's what really gets me, too. People say, well, you lied about this. But, you know, you can't say that any of us are lying about anything. All we're doing is telling what we were told. I mean,
and I'm going by the police because, you know, at the end of the day, you can be the biggest blogger, you can be the biggest gossip, you can have the biggest mouth at the coffee shop. And, and if I'm ticking off people too damn bad, at the end of the day, it's what the law says. It's what what's proven in court, and the evidence is taken in by whom, by what? By the police, correct? So I kind of got to go with them.
Absolutely.
Call me old-fashioned.
What I'm fascinated with is this latest press release out of Putnam.
With the dates wrong and everything?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that one. No, I mean, you know, they have some new clues about the day that it happened, and more importantly and more interestingly, the days before it.
Yes, and when this comes to light, when this is revealed, I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't.
Well,
so far, you know, it seems like we've been at a stalemate for damn near 11 months, and I just hope they got something usable. That's all I got to say.
I actually believe in these guys. I know they've been vilified, you know, on TV. They've been vilified online. But I trust them. That they may not be the biggest organization in the world, but they do give a damn. And
yes,
you know, and when I hear someone say this will not become a cold case, I will not allow it to happen, I take notice. Yeah, it would be so easy to just go, let's find a new story. Let's talk about it. But I won't do it. And TJ, I know you won't do it.
No.
And Jam won't do it.
No.
Yep. We
I just
are...
wish this little girl could get found. I wish they would find her and bring her home if she's still alive, and my heart still tells me she's still out there.
Let's hope so. We're just about out of time. Let's go around the panel once. Denny, your parting thoughts.
Yeah, we talked at the start of the show about some of the players in the Casey and Kaylee Anthony case and how they're not a very likable crew. I was just thinking, if you're ran a school of some kind and you wanted to present a class on parenting, who from the from the family here, the Cummings, the Sheffields, and all that, who would you want to be a presenter at your school, at your course about good parenting? It's just a shame that that Haley was being raised in this atmosphere. It's really a discouraging thing. Should it have happened? Should possibly some agency have gotten involved sooner, maybe removed? I don't know. I'm not there. I don't know the law. But it's just a very frustrating thing that you seem to have everyone with their own agenda, and in some cases you could draw the conclusion that maybe Haley is not the heart and soul of finding her is not what's driving some of these people, and I find that very upsetting.
Levi, your parting thoughts.
I agree with everything that Denny said. These people need to put Haley first, and they need to put all of their drama and their partying and their drugs and their harassing phone calls and the road rage incidents behind them.
TJ.
Let's bring her to a close, and here's hoping that the information they find is finally that small little piece of the jigsaw puzzle that fits, because they've been looking for that one piece for a very long time.
Jan.
We need to bring Haley home and just keep up the prayers that one day we will find her and get her home where she belongs. Just keep praying.
This is Simon and Jan Barrett wishing everyone a happy 2010, although it isn't starting out great. You know, let's find Haley Cummings. Little girl is missing. Little girl is out there somewhere. Let's bring her back.
Amen.
Amen.
Okay. Thank you for listening, and I want to thank our panelists for participating. A tough show, but we will prevail. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for being here today.